Mayo Civic Center Consultant update. Mr. Reinhardt, Mr. Beth.
I will start real quickly. Dan and Bethany here with us, as well as the consultant team. Today, just to frame it up, I wanted to just touch base on two slides that we showed you in March that really kicked off the effort and the initiative we've been working on. And so the first one was to bring in the industry expert, and that was those two key things. One is, how do we define success? Because we talked about, it seemed like we had all different definitions of what success looked like for the Mayo Civic Center. And then, after we learned that, how do we then move forward to best meet that goal or objective? And then the next part was, the key things that we were looking to do was enhance market competitiveness, optimize the use of the MCC, which is the key thing, maximize our revenues, and then at the end was to limit the expenditures that we had talked about that are ever slowly growing off every year. And so that was the ultimate goal of this. Dan and Bethany have now been here, have had many, many conversations, and so today is really to start to summarize some of the information, some of it's preliminary, and then to start talking about our next steps moving forward. So with that, I will turn it over to Dan.
Great. Thank you. Thank you to the members of the council and Mayor. Happy to be here. As usual, start by saying this. The conversations that we had, the meetings that we had, the good news is there's a lot of interest, and people are passionate related to their support of the direction for the future. We certainly have a lot of really good, and again, not just surface conversations about where people sort of see the future and where different members of the stakeholder community see the future. So what we want to do, as mentioned, we want to go over a little bit of that and talk about what we've done, but then get into some specifics related to what the next steps might be and where sort of direction might go. And as we're going through this, don't hesitate to stop, jump in, further clarifications, whatever it may be. We're certainly happy to do that as we move through some things. So a couple of things we want to go through today is go through the outcomes of what we've heard. So were there areas that we, in this sort of start to see consensus, and there were, and we're going to talk about those. Reviewing what we're doing in terms of gathering data. So we've been working on making sure that we can look at where we are today. Thirdly, reviewing industry models. So one of the things we'll tell you right up front is that one of the discussions that was consistent throughout was an interest by stakeholders and by members of the business community to make sure that as part of this process, we took a thorough look at what model, what structure is ultimately going to position us for the highest level of success. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. And then again, today we want to make sure we get feedback from the council today. So we want to continue to get thoughts that we can make sure that we sort of feed into the ultimate outcome. So for the stakeholder interviews, here were a couple of key things. Met with over 50 industry stakeholders. Several of the people that we've met with, or not several, but a few have had follow-up calls with us where they will have thought about things and then they want to sort of talk more or get into the issue deeper. So we've had a chance to do that with some. So let's start with number one, and that was consistent dialogue throughout where the need to strongly consider a new / reimagined governance and operations model. So one of the comments that we got consistently was people were very interested in specific feedback, goal setting, the issue of how do we optimize the convention center, as was mentioned, all very interested in thoughts about that. People have thoughts, but there was a strong consensus that if we were to do that and come back with a series of either recommendations or thoughts from everybody and not address the current sort of strengths and weaknesses of our current model, that this process would not be complete in people's minds. So they felt that we needed to make sure we took a hard look at that as part of going through this. A second piece here was continuing to look at enhanced reporting. One of the things we heard is let's make sure that as part of the outcome here, we have a clear, unified definition for what success looks like. And something that any member of the community or the council can look at and say, yes, we now know exactly how we all collectively sort of track success and what success means, if you will. Next one was the issue of singular, seamless governing entity. The point there is a lot of interest in figuring out how we can make sure that all parties, whether it's the MCC Commission, the CDB board, the internal staff members, vendors, how do we create a situation where there is a seamless, singular meaning functioning in a singular fashion. So singular may not mean literally singular, but where it really functions in a singular fashion. For unified metrics and goals, the desire for, well, here where we say a shift in balance in the mix of business, what came out in the discussions was some interest in, again, what does success look like? So when you think about the goal to have large conventions be attracted to Rochester with the center as their meeting space, as being one of our goals that we want to make sure occurs, or the goals of making sure that we operate the center in as solid a fiscal process that we can. So what's the sort of fiscal approach to managing it? How do you balance those two? And what is that mix of business that we all believe sort of is the right way to go? And lastly, desire for a proactive and streamlined sales strategy, which really ties back to the issue of unified metrics and goals, so that we have a way to look at, you know, our holistic goals and say this is the most effective sales approach to get us there. And how do we make sure that's the most streamlined and it's the most effective? And I want to be clear that the presentation and our work is designed to look at the future. So what we're really doing is we're talking about where are we today and ultimately what's going to put us in the best position to be successful in the future. Any questions on those? Okay.
Question.
Yeah. I have a question. I'm thrown off a little bit by the singular, seamless government entity with unified metrics and goals.
Yeah.
You basically have two different organizations that have two different goals. So how can you make them the same?
There you go. That was well said.
Okay.
I mean, that's the point.
Okay.
Right? The point was, how do you take that potential separate goals and how do you put them together? So that if you look at our current model, so that regardless of whether I'm a member of the MCC Commission or CDB board, wherever I am in the model, that I have a unified approach to what success looks like.
Okay.
Fair enough. Okay, so a couple of things here. We're in the process of working with the CBB and the center on culling data. So we've looked at the current activity levels in the building. We have begun meetings to talk about with the CBB sort of current approaches when it comes to their analytics. So sort of sales activity and where that is. We're not ready today to sort of present that data, but we want to tell you that we're in that process. We also want to talk a little about why are we doing that and what's sort of the goal of that. So a couple of things here. One, we're looking at the current understanding of the activity levels and the business mix, understanding the current sales process, understanding a little bit of, we use the term pipeline, but the point is, you know, what's that current sales activity? So what is sort of out there that we're working on so we can get an understanding of that? In parallel, looking at room block commitments from the hotels, there's been recent work done in this area to sort of go back to the hotels and say, what are you willing to allocate for conventions at the center? It's an important piece of the puzzle to make sure that that's clarified. Understanding the group universe of the work that's been done, what is the, you know, where's the opportunity when it comes to driving group business to the center/Rochester? Booking policies, processes for catering and contracting room blocks. Those of us that remember the first process, there was a very extensive session that we facilitated where we sat down with members from many different factions of the community that have interest in or that use the convention center, the civic center. And we talked through with them what should the priorities be. So we have arts organizations there. We had local event organizers that do social events there. We had different, you know, hotels there. We had a whole group. And we determined together what we felt priorities were for booking the convention center, the civic center. And that ultimately, you know, it translates into the term booking policy. which is really what's the strategic direction for the center. That group, 6 years ago, 5.5 years ago, said that the number one priority from their perspective, and these were all different users, was citywide conventions. So they understood the fact that what was important for that building, the reason that they believed that the convention center or the civic center was here, not the only reason, but an important reason, was to make sure that we were successful in how we brought large conventions to Rochester. And then we went down from there. We talked about other things. So we talked about other types of events. So the booking policy sort of lays that out. So we want to review that. We want to make sure it is still relevant today. And then how does that ultimately inform what the goals are and where we want to go going forward in terms of the mix of business in the civic center? So as it says here, we're going to look at all the data that we've gathered. We're going to create a roadmap. And by the way, when I say we're going to do this collaboratively, so this isn't just us doing it and saying, okay, here's what we think. It's us taking the data and creating a model for a where we think the business mix should be or could be, and then how we would get from here to there, but then work collaboratively on that to make sure that we've taken into consideration any factors that need to be taken into consideration as we do this. And that will ultimately drive goals and drive activity levels for sales activities and operational activities that tie to this outcome. So the next slide is sort of a sample of this. It's not us, so this is not necessarily this, but this is a sample of things that you will see. So if you look at the right-hand pie charts, these shows the breakdown of business, so you'll see the type of business that is currently, you know, in the Civic Center. You'll see the ratios of efficiency in the exhibit hall in terms of move out and move in versus show days. You'll see occupancy by type of space. So here's exhibit halls, ballrooms, and meeting space. And you'll sort of see a blended occupancy for the Civic Center, where we are today. Depending on the goals that are set, a typical sort of benchmark for a building that is quote unquote optimized and kind of at capacity is usually around 70%. Because if you think about marrying conventions with each other in groups, they don't marry up exactly. So the idea of having sort of 100% of the space occupied on an annual basis is pretty difficult. So typically when you get into that sort of 70% area, it's considered sort of practical capacity. But what's also important is not just the level of activity, but is it the business mix that reflects what the council and others believe or should be the priorities for the convention center going forward. Go to the next slide. This is another one. For example, in this particular scenario, what is shown here is priority 5 is non-room night generating business in this particular scenario. So in this scenario, this is an example of a convention center that is sort of here currently and ultimately wants to go here in the future. And we will show that for ourselves. So we'll be able to see where are we and then sort of where do we want to go and what are the implications of that. Go to the next slide. This here is an example of how we create goals for how we want to ultimately get to that final point of an optimized building. So in this particular model, if you look at 2023, and again, it's not us, but in this particular city, this city wants to get to a point where there are 20 citywide conventions annually booked in this particular
question.
So what are we exactly looking at today? Because we're looking at all just examples of what you could show us in the future. Are we going to have like a palette to choose from? Is that why we're seeing these different scenarios?
Well, we're going to talk to you about models, but in terms of the actual goals, we're not ready yet to show the actual goals.
Because we're just looking at, we're not really seeing anything, right?
Right, this is where we're going. This is what the outcome is going to be.
We're in the middle of this process right now. So we're refining, these are examples, so we'll come back and you'll see the actuals.
Like where is the Civic Center? And those
so the previous slide showed what an actual was compared to what the goals are.
Yes.
That's right.
For another city, not...
Yes.
That's right.
Okay.
That's correct. So it shows the kind of thing we're going to be looking at, because what's important is to, what we want to do today was kind of get our heads around that whole question of, you know, the evolution of business mix and how is that, where do we want to go there?
Okay.
Next slide. This ultimately shows how you take that data, and if you look at the upper left-hand corner, this shows how that rolls up to the amount of sort of the level of sales activity that's needed to ultimately achieve the goals. So you'll see the same ultimate outcome as to where we need to be based on agreed upon goals ourselves. Okay. So that gives you an indication of that sort of part of the process that says we want to end up with agreement on what an optimized conviction center looks like. Where are we today? How are we going to get from point A to point B? The other piece we want to talk about, and specifically because of the consistent feedback that we got in the stakeholder meetings, was this issue of models and the fact that there was significant interest. As a matter of fact, I think in all the different meetings that we have, the people that we talked to, at 90%+ of the meetings, this came up in terms of making sure that as part of this process, we look at where the possible options would be or what might strengthen us from a future model perspective. So what we want to run through with you is examples of models that are sort of out there and have that maybe lead to conversation about things that are important to think about as we look at this year. Right. So let's walk through some of these. A couple of things to just talk about. If you look at the left-hand side, this is a breakdown of generally how CDBs typically are structured. So you'll notice that 60% of all CDBs nationally are private 501c6 organizations, 10% are quasi-government members of authorities, 10% are city or county agencies, so they're public, and then 4% are run as part of chambers. So these are sort of different scenarios of how CDBs were, you know, how they're sort of set up. On the right-hand side, if you look at convention centers, there's some that are publicly operated, staff and public employees. There are some that are privately operated by for-profit operators. There are some that are privately operated but that are run through authorities, so they're actually, it's actually a nonprofit that runs the convention center. And then underneath that, in food and beverage, there's multitudes of models that exist, from exclusive caterers to sort of very focused models that have a mix of local caterers as well as an in-house option. So if you look at these two, these sort of show you some of the different kind of combinations that are out there in the industry that again, think about. One thing that we always say when we think about this is we don't necessarily want to look at what somebody else does and says, okay, that's what's right for us. We do want to make sure that the ultimate outcome here is what's right for Rochester, like what speaks to our community and what our needs are. And I'll give you an example. When the MCC Commission was formed 5-6 years ago, that was a very unique model for this type of operation. So there are virtually none or very few others that we know of where a commission, a private industry commission, has the type of input that they have with a publicly run convention center. So that's an example of something that evolved 5 years ago from the conversations and what we did here that was really unique to Rochester in terms of what the interest was at that point. And so we want to make sure that we're thinking about those types of dynamics going forward in terms of the input that would lead to where this might go. Yeah.
How odd is it to have your convention center run by your park board? That would seem to be almost more unique than having a commission.
Yeah, but it sits with Parks and Rec. Yeah, that is unique.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where that movement was, is it was under the park board with all of the parks and the trails and everything that we had. And
right.
I think the idea was that they needed to be a little bit more oversight, was the idea of the commission.
Right, and a lot of convention centers have what they call advisory boards, okay, that don't have the, for lack of a better term, what was designed around the commission. Terms of what their functionality is. We have seen a lot of less than effective advisory boards out there. This model was specifically designed to give real teeth, if you will, to the commission. Okay. So here's a couple of ones we're just going to run through. First one is the example of a city-run convention center and CDB. So this is the example of what if it was all publicly run, as an example. The next one is a city-run convention center with a private nonprofit CDB. The next one is a private for-profit center operator with a city-run CDB. So you can sort of see we're going to show you different combinations of opportunities. And again, the goal today is to get feedback, not necessarily decide, you know, at this moment sort of what's the actual track, but get feedback when people sort of, when everybody looks at this in terms of where they see things to sort of think about. nonprofit authority, that's a model where there is one private board that runs everything, and that the employees are employees of an authority. So they're all employees of a singular, typically 501c6. So that's another model that's out there in the industry. And then if you think about it, our model, and I think Councilmember Huskin, to add to your point, this could also, that the asterisk there could be, you know, the reporting to the park board, but our model, what we call a city-run center with an active commission inserted, you know, into the process in a private nonprofit CDB. So that's what we are today. So just to look at this visually, this is the model that has the city overseeing the center and the CDB as a singular point. Couple of cities, Waco, Texas, Santa Fe, New Mexico. Those are examples of cities that function in that model, where everything is, for lack of a better term, it's all sort of city run. Again, to your point, in all these models, they report to the city administration. They don't report to a separate part of the city in these. So that's one visual here. Next one. This is a example of a city-run convention center with a private nonprofit CDB. So you can see here there's a contract as exists here between the CDB and the city. And then there's board of directors and staff. And on the right, you'll see the direct line to the Civic Center. The Convention Center staff there, some samples of those, Sacramento, California, New Orleans, Raleigh, different examples of that. And just to go back a little bit, and we'll go through these and we'll talk about some of the broader pros and cons, but the big thing that we find when you look at all of these models, and you know, you actually sort of hit on this, is one of the big things that a lot of destinations want to figure out is this issue of common metrics, commonality, so that how do you create something where everybody who's involved is absolutely, you know, sort of working off the same, if you will, same song sheet, so they're all thinking about the same things. One of the reasons why some of these different things exist is because destinations have said, if we have these two entities two separate, and if they've got separate ways that they're evaluated for success, we're going to have a hard time being successful, because we're going to have this conflict between the different entities. If you look at the next one here, this is a private for-profit center operator with a city-run CDB. This is a rare model, but this is where CDB would actually be part of the public sector, and then the center would actually be run by a private for-profit operator. Bakersfield, Broward County, Irving, Texas are examples of those. The next one is private for-profit center operated with a private nonprofit CDB. So these are two contracts coming out of the city, one being run by a private operator, the other being run by a private, if you will, 501c6, typically CDB. A lot of examples of these that you can see here over the country. This is arguably, not that one's better or worse, there's a lot of frequency of this one out there. Next one. Private nonprofit authority. So this is one that is also, there are cities that have evolved to this state, but this is one where everybody is part of the same corporation. So this is where there is an authority that, essentially it's an organization that has a contract with the city that essentially oversees the Convention Visitors Bureau function as well as the Civic Center function. All the employees in this model are authority employees. And these are examples used in San Jose, Pasadena, and Charlotte of examples of destinations that have this model. And then here's us. And that is city-run center with a commission. And this is really you should put here an asterisk, is with an active commission and a private nonprofit CDB model. So that's our model here that sort of essentially came out of the process that we went through last time. And so that's the model that where we sit. And just to think about this, the discussion, if you think about this model issue, is there's a couple of things to sort of probe here. One is, which will most effectively increase convention and sort of support all visitorship, if you will, to Rochester? Which will maximize MCC fiscal performance? Which will help reduce costs and risk to the city? Which will help also with the issue of sort of community access and community impact when it comes to the center. And here's the thing that's important for everybody to know is that there, you know, we don't necessarily believe that one model is quote unquote better than another. The key is what's right for Rochester. Because any of these models can be structured in a way, can have agreements that are set up, can have contracts and metrics and accountability are set up to ultimately get to an agreed upon end goal. The question is what's right for us, what's going to be the most effective based on all the dynamics of Rochester. And the dynamics, by the way, go beyond the center itself. So these are also destination dynamics that are important to think about as we look at this in terms of sort of what is, you know, what's right for Rochester. But the reason that we wanted to raise this early is because we got very consistent feedback that this should be part of the process, that this should be looked at carefully, and that what we shouldn't do is either not address this, come back with collective thoughts on where we can go from here, but not have addressed the question of what's going to position us the best for success going forward. If you go back to the recommendations that were made 5+ years ago with the model that you saw before, one of the key parts of the recommendations had to do with accountability and collaboration and integration between the MCC Commission and the CBB Board. There was also recommendations that were all agreed to in that report that the engagement in the goal setting process would be between all teams, so that if there were goals set related to the Civic Center, that all members of all parties would be involved with that process and ultimately collaborate and present to the council what those goals would be, and that they would have common singular metrics in terms of success. And feedback that we got very clearly was that this needs to be looked at as part of the outcome of this process. So let me stop there. And questions, comments, thoughts?
Well, I'm sure we'll have a lot of discussion. One of the things, as you were going through the models and so forth, I didn't really hear mention of any of the models that would seek to blend the two operations, whether they're publicly or privately operated. One of the things missing is that CBB, their mission is much broader than MCC.
Right.
Their mission is to bring business to Rochester. Mm-hmm. MCC is clearly a part of that, but their mission is much broader. So any model that would blend those two would raise a question mark in mind, because I think their goals and mission are far bigger than just MCC.
Yeah, we've, the model I think that basically speaks to what you were talking about is this authority model, where it is sort of all part of a broader governance picture. And we've been involved with virtually every model, but I will say that in destinations where they think about evolving towards that, this is a big part of the conversation, is how do we make sure that the destination activities that relate to raising awareness of Rochester, period, all the things that go on, the development of Rochester as a destination, I mean, how does all that still, how is that encompassed, if you will, in the model so that it is not perceived or that it is not just a entity that is formed to exclusively, if you will, run and book business in the Civic Center.
Mr. Campion.
So following that line of thought, I guess then that in my mind begs the question of how common is it that the CBB is the sales entity for the convention center versus simply being an entity that whose mission is to bring business to town?
Yeah, that's a great point. If you go back to 6 years ago, again, just for context purposes, one of the things I didn't mention that should have here as part of that, part of our model today, is there was a conscious decision 6 years ago to put all of the sales operations in the CBB. And the thought process there, similar to the whole issue of seamlessness, the thought process was to have, you know, a singular team that thought about everything from weddings all the way to large conventions as a singular team. They looked at that as, you know, as a group, as, you know, sort of a collective team,
And if the thinking back then was that that was going to create a more holistic approach to sales. So this is unique. So I'm glad you raised that up. That piece is also another unique feature of our model. So there are some destinations where there are different parts of the center sales operation that actually are led by the center team, and some parts are led by the CDB team. We have a unique setup here where it's all under one roof.
So a follow-up on that would be, as a part of the analysis that's going to take place, one of the things, we've been down this road before, I think literally with your company. So part of what I want to see come out of this is, why should we trust that the next version, next model is going to be effective? And the last model clearly brought us to the point where we're engaging you again to talk about what we need to do.
Yeah.
So I would like some sort of analysis of what happened, some retrospective to say, either we had this idea, it didn't flush out, that was part of the cause, but something that speaks to why can we expect a different result from this pass through the process.
Yep.
And I think, if you hit on it, if it's completely unique that this complete isolation of sales responsibility to the CVB is unique, then I would hope part of this analysis is that really the right model for us? Even if we don't generally change the reporting structure and we just look at where the responsibility should lie, is there some of that internal analysis being done as part of this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that needs to be part of the outcome, so that the reason, like I say, when we circle back, if you will, with Steve fairly quickly after our meetings, with what we heard, we realized that we needed to early on start having this discussion. So as opposed to all the other analysis about goal setting and how are we going to improve results and all these sort of things, we could do that and sort of set the structural question aside. The feedback we got was no. Get into that question right up front. Make sure we're talking about it now. So yes, all the way to the question of what's the right sort of sales setup. And again, I also don't want to presuppose anything quite yet. But that direction that we got, or consistency that we got, made us want to come and sort of get that moving and sort of get that discussion moving almost in a parallel track with other recommendations.
And this would be the end of the line of thought, I hope, is I think President Staber has a good point about the scope of the RCVP and not wanting to just make the metrics about the CV or about the center sales. But in industry that I'm in, it's not uncommon to have sales presented right alongside R&D, presented right alongside their expense reports. So that sort of thing, I don't think, is an unreasonable expectation to be able to produce. And I think you've demonstrated in your readout, is I think we can talk about unifying metrics. It's unification of that entire analysis that makes determining success and failure such a challenge. So I guess I'm happy to hear that. I also want to put all those cards on the table, because I hope, and some of the output here is an analysis of what's the best setup to give us that, not just horror charts.
Can you just go through, starting with 1 to 6? I just want to look at those again. You went through them kind of fast.
Yeah, hopefully we can get a copy of the slide.
That's good. Thank you.
But I just wanted to finish off the thought with Mr. Campion, too, because that goes to some of the metrics you might use. So, for example, CVB might use as a metric room nights. And we could have a series of events at MCC that really maximizes it, but maybe they're all local events and it has little to no impact on room nights.
Yeah.
They're not staying in hotels. So that's why there's some perhaps justification for making sure that you keep those somewhat separate. But Mr. Bildebeck.
Can I just make one comment there real quick, on that? I just want to say one thing about that, because that almost, regardless of model, is at the crux of a lot of this. Right? What you just said is this agreement on what an optimized center looks like, because that speaks to the blend of, and again, they're not mutually exclusive, but sort of room night generating activity and non-room night generating activity. And we don't want to presuppose. So what we want to do is do the analysis that we're working on right now, go through with the two teams, where are we today, talk about where we want to be in 5 years. Not necessarily based on any other, you know, destination per se, but based on us, where do we want to be? This is going to take into account things like hotel room block availability. There's other factors here. So that agreement as to what that optimal mix is and then what the sales and operational efforts need to be to get us there, that's almost as important as anything. Because what we find is oftentimes that is almost not talked about. It's just sort of everything just kind of comes together, and then everybody says, well, we need to focus more on this or less on this. We're trying to create something that we all can agree to as to where we're going.
Right.
You know?
And that's where I think it helps. You're trying to get your arms around what is it we want.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to not only maximize the economic efficiency of MCC, but also maximize economic return for our community.
That's right.
That's a much bigger thing.
That's right. Now, I'll give you one example in a larger convention center, so the numbers are a little bit larger, but same concept. We did this analysis, and we took their current level of business, and I think they were doing 300 or 400.
Yeah, high 200s.
They were doing 200 and plus events, and we went through this whole analysis, and we all agreed on this optimized building, and I think the number became
215.
Yeah, so the number of events actually went down. The size of events increased because there was more focus on the larger events, and it did have positive impact on economic impact, and it had some negative impact on top line revenue. But everybody agreed on this holistically. So both the center leadership, the public leadership, CBB leadership, everybody said, yeah, this is sort of the path we want to take. So that is a critical outcome of this that we want to make sure is part of this.
Okay. No.
Sorry.
Can you ever go through 2, 3, and 4 here too while we're talking? Yes, so we can see it more than just one at a time here.
And one of the reasons was part of my question. You have up there how these are going to be run, but I'm concerned when it says city run, and you mentioned earlier that city administration would be responsible. What are their duties? Because our city administration is very busy now.
Right.
And if you're going to throw a lot more work in there, then what falls off the plate? If we're overfilling the plate, something has to fall off.
Yep.
And here we're looking at how do we run this efficiently.
Yeah.
So my concern is I need more understanding of what's the expectation. So when you say city run and city administration is going to be the answering whoever or setting, I want to know what that means.
Yeah.
So I need better definition.
Gotcha. Let's go back to number one. Right. Let's go back to number one. I mean, it's obviously a simple chart. But what this contemplates is that all the employees are public employees. So they're all city employees. And they are departments, if you will, of the city. What we've seen in the models that are up there is, in one case, there are actually two departments. In one case, they're one department. So there's a city structure that oversees that. But in most of the cases that you see here, they report to the city administrator, city manager. They don't report to another department because they're viewed typically as a large enough entity that they need to be associated with directly with the city manager or assistant city manager, but they're in the city manager's office. So
do you have a list of pros and cons that goes along
with that?
Because I think this is a dramatic shift of where
we're not recommending this. We're really just showing you options. I mean, we have got this in the spirit of time. We could actually put this in a slide deck. We have pros and cons for each one of these.
I think that would be helpful.
We do. We just didn't want to get too far into the, but yes, because there's some real, you know, potential challenges when it comes to a fully publicly run entity, but there are also some, there's certainly some, they're both. So yes, we have those.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Get to 3 and 4 still. Thank you.
So this one here is the private for-profit center operator with the city run CBD. That's this one. This is a rare model, by the way. The other one is private for-profit center operator with a nonprofit CBD. So this is, you know, two contracts with two separate private entities. Let me give an example in this one. So this, we were talking about alignment earlier. In this model, the way that those contracts are written is just critical. Because if I'm a private center operator and the city writes a contract for me that says you have to maximize revenue and that's how you're going to be judged, period. that I'm going to set off on that course. And if I'm the CDB and I have a contract with the city that says you're going to drive room nights and that's how you're going to be measured, we have seen situations where those two contracts are really just in, they're basically almost in conflict with each other. So for example, in models like this one, boy, that the metrics have to be crystal clear in all agreements.
And we've worked in scenarios where this model is in place and the contracts have been conflicting, and there's a term in the industry now where they're trying to bring those entities together through an alliance. So to Dan's point, the contracts have to be written in such a way where it's very clear that there is unified and balanced goals, so everybody's on the same page. Otherwise, you end up having to go through a process like this again to try and bring them back together.
Yep.
So this is very rooted in the contract.
And if you think about it, regardless of outcome, here's another example of sort of regardless of outcome. Even if we ultimately said we just want to tighten up where we are today, we would be making recommendations on accountability and metrics and all sorts of things related to that that need to be continue to evolve one way or the other, regardless of sort of what that outcome is.
Mr. Campion.
The contract. So I would assume, and your familiarity with private operators of facilities like the Mayo Civic Center is probably better than mine, in most cases, a private operator is going to require the booking, right? I mean, the private operators, to meet their own objective of maximizing revenue, is going.
So there are models where the private operators are very much dependent on and work collaboratively with the CDB for the bookings. So no, there's a lot of models where private CDBs and for-profit operators are very much locked together on that. So no. Now, back to my earlier comment about the way the contracts are written and the way that interdependency, if you will, is structured. It has to be structured well, but that happens. There are a few, and there really are just a few, where the private operator takes the entire sales and marketing effort and all of it for the center, which would mean that they're doing all the work when it comes to meeting planners and large conventions. That's actually relatively rare.
One of the key questions for me, I think, that
yep.
we should answer, just my opinion, is who do you want to compete with?
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if you have an entirely internal city, a public operation, a public department, in many cases, they're going to be competing with other city departments. Park department needs this, public works needs that, these folks need something to fund their facility.
Mm-hmm.
If we make it more of a privately run organization,
mm-hmm.
there would be a greater tendency, I think, to compete with the Mankato's, Lacrosse, you know, they're true competitors, as opposed to fighting for internal dollars.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the questions you want to ask yourself is who do you want to compete against or with?
Yeah, another aspect of that, which I think you've raised, which is an important one, ties to the customer.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, sometimes we talk about these things internally. But the question is, again, for Rochester, what's going to deliver the best for the customer, too?
Mm-hmm.
So how does the customer, when we're competing with other destinations, which of these are going to create a model where the customer goes, boy, it's really seamless, the service levels are high, all sorts of great things go on in Rochester, and I want to come here. So that's another part of the analysis we want to do.
All right. Somebody else had their
question. Well, just at point of clarity, you changed a lot of this around from the packet. So it's kind of confusing, but you talk, and just to make sure, this for-profit center operator is the same as a third-party operator. Is that
correct.
You referred to earlier, correct?
Yeah.
I just want to make sure.
The reason we use the for-profit versus the sort of non-profit is in the authority model, with all the employees being authority employees, that's a non-profit that's therefore running the building, because it's all part of that.
Right. Well, we had five, and the order's been goofed around, and
the
wordages have been changed, so I just want to make sure I'm clear on what we're doing here. So
in the authority model, why couldn't the authority just contract for operation of the facility?
That happens.
Okay.
So there are authorities who are formed, and they have, from the city, they have very specific responsibilities that they're in place to do, and that they ultimately, or even as part of it, they opt to outsource the convention center to a third-party operator. So that model exists.
Okay. And is it, do you see like a bifurcation of how these are set up based on city size? Is that usually driving this, or what's
somewhat? I mean, some, you'll see there's some of the larger cities, but what we're seeing is more destinations. The focus that we see destinations is that it's really the seamless question. So there's different, but all these models, there is continued focus on seamlessness. I mean, what Bethany was talking about is even in destinations where they've got two contracts with the operator of the center and with the CDB, there's still a lot more focus on common metrics and commonality and seamlessness. And from a customer perspective, I mean, it, not to get into a whole lot on the customer side, but if you think about navigating, if you're booking a large convention that has multiple moving parts, you need multiple vendors, you know, you need the sales team, you need the operations team. There are customers who continue to give feedback in surveys that it is a very cumbersome process that they go through in destinations to book a convention. And so part of this modeling is also designed to try to look at what's going to be the most seamless for the customer. And this includes things like food and beverage contractors and audiovisual contractors, all sorts of things.
Question, in your experience, tell me if there's any truth to this statement. When you have privately run operations, you would expect that they bring expertise to the table, but do they also bring other advantages, for example, connections in the industries and so forth? Because one of the complaints we hear frequently is we're not getting the type or variety of performances that we want to see.
Yeah.
Are there some advantages to having private organizations involved in that regard?
Next question. No, I'm kidding. If you think about how a meeting planner makes a decision, so what is the real driver? You know, what is that true final? We believe it's the destination. So we believe that it is the fact that Rochester is a match for them. Yes, the facilities matter and other things matter, but they are still determining that Rochester is the best place for their convention. They're going to drive the highest attendance. The attendees are going to have a good time in terms of the amenities that are here. There's all sorts of factors if you look at meeting planner surveys. If you take that literally, it's hard to say that then, you know, an operator that has multiple cities is going to be able to consistently say, because we're in another city, we want you to go there. Because most of the research that we find with meeting planners, that's not how they make the decision. Like, it doesn't mean that these companies aren't great companies and that they don't have all sorts of great things. But that's one area that we haven't necessarily seen research that would indicate that or things that indicate that. It's a little bit different if you think about a hotel brand. You know, so if you're a Hilton person, you know, you might in a city say, I want to stay in a Hilton. I tend to book Hiltons. We haven't seen in the center industry that type of branding connection that exists. Because that decision is so, the destination is so critical when it comes to how the decision's made.
Mr. Campion and Mr. Ruskin.
I thought your question was going to a different spot. So I thought we were asking more about, for instance, an alignment between a potential private operator and Live Nation to bring in a particular
right.
music.
I'm sorry, not convention.
I'm talking about
conventions. Oh, okay. On the entertainment side,
right? Yeah. Is there a benefit to going with a third party operator to get access to a larger operation
that maybe has more buying power or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think if we had AEG or Live Nation here, you know, they work closely with all the operators, so they know them well and they have alliances. I don't want to overly speak for them. I'm not sure that a Live Nation is going to now within a city they might determine that there is a facility they want to go to because they have a stronger relationship with another. But they're still going to look at the artists and the attendance and the ticket sales, and that's really going to drive their decision. So I think there's some alliances there that do exist with the entertainment industry. But I would still argue that they're still looking at what's going to create the best, what's going to drive the ticket sales for the for the artists.
Yeah, and it could just be my misunderstanding of the industry, but I would think that if you have a performance, you know, they're looking to maximize performances without crisscrossing the country.
Sure.
So if you're at the Target Center or something and you can get in an extra performance or two by, you know, going 80 miles to Rochester, I'm just thinking that some private operators are going to have the wherewithal and the industry connections to make some of those things happen that might not now.
Yeah, I mean, there's for example, in most of the larger operators, they have entertainment people, even on the center operator side, that are working on that. But I just would hate to. I think that's a potential. There's a potential piece there, but you know, we've also seen authority managed, publicly managed facilities where they're active. I mean, they're
yeah. And that was what I was asking. Was there any evidence from some other centers that might operate that way that they've seen that sort of a slight benefit or uptick? Mr. Bilibeck.
We talked about a private and how it works with the national groups. How well do they work with the local groups? We talked about this before, 6 years ago or whatever, that we want to make sure that the local groups have the availability to get to the city center. So if you go to a private, what have we seen?
The key there is the booking policy and the commitment to that overall. And that's why if there's one thing that we believe is a critical outcome of this process, it's this. Because there is a part of a booking policy that speaks to the issue of community engagement. And that is absolutely a measurable. And when we did this before, we talked about, for example, certain key community events that should have the ability to be in the center on a consistent basis because they mean a lot to this community. Well, that is part of what should be revised and confirmed in this process as in the booking policy. So it's sort of whoever runs it needs to conform or, agree to this. So I wouldn't want to, again, sort of make the blanket statement that if it's a private operator, they sort of won't. They'll do what the council says is the direction for the, for the building. And I think this is an important outcome because sometimes that sort of community impact piece is not factored in. And then 5 years down the road, the public says, we don't have any connection sort of with the center, and there needs to be a strategy there. So, absolutely.
Yeah, and in the optimal business mix, where we showed the sample of the before and after, if you will, there'd be that level of community engagement and community events and access would be part of that business mix. So whatever that goal, whatever those slices of pie look like here, there'd be a piece of that for this community that would either be programming or access to events or whatever the case may be, but it would be part of that business mix.
I mean, we sort of use a three-prong approach here, and the two prongs everybody knows, we all talk about, that's revenue and room nights, but there is a third prong, which is the community impact piece that needs to be part of that whole equation. So that being said, now we also, with booking policies, if something has no community impact or little, and it is not a great revenue driver to the building, and it has very little or any room night impact. So if all three of those score low, we make the case that the convention center is the wrong place for that group. But there's other places, there's other venues in the city that are better when it comes to housing that. So that's another piece of that strategy.
So we can certainly entertain some more discussion, but as we start to maybe wrap this up, what are some specific questions we could answer for you to help you move this along?
Well, I think that the line of questioning helps us, right? So I think that's what we want to hear was the things that the sort of the council is when they look at these things, the things that the council says, let's make sure, and as you have, that we don't forget to think about this, and let's make sure that this is incorporated, and some of the things we talked about are important that we can hear, because we want to make sure that we're taking that in, as well as the feedback we've gotten sort of broadly. So I think that's one piece. And I also think, when you think about structural change or structural evolution, that's a big thing. There's a lot of moving parts to that. It's easy to sort of move a couple of blocks around on a page, but that's a lot different than what would it really take to implement that in a way that would be effective. What are all the other moving parts? And as we start to work through it, we want to be able to think during the process, what are those moving parts that have got to be considered? That may, by the way, help us rethink some things when we start thinking about implications. So I think being able to engage on that discussion throughout this is going to be important.
Okay, Mr. Bilibeck.
can you give us any kind of timeline? When do we expect to hear from you again? What are your deliverables at that time?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this, I think, is one that bothers most of us that have been around for quite some time.
Right.
From what you brought back initially to today, we would have to say isn't working.
Right.
And so I'm just looking, what are the timeline? What are your deliverables?
Yeah, we will have on this first piece, the piece that has the optimization, the analysis, all of that that shows where do we want to go, that we should have ready in the next 30 days. Okay. Right? So that piece, which sort of becomes part of the roadmap for where we're going. Being able to come back and say we think we've got consensus around model, that will take us longer than 30 days because part of that is the process of getting the consensus. So I would say that's probably going to be at least 2 months at least till we can really make sure we've had the dialogue there. But I think if you look at those two chunks that way, I think in the next 2 to 3 months we should be at a point. But again, on the second one, fast isn't always good there. Because we want to make sure we're thinking about something that really is achievable. And we don't want to just come up here and say here's a recommended model without a lot of conversation behind it.
Mr. Campion.
So the process of generating the model, you have the data that you need to do that?
The optimization, that's what you saw? Yeah. Yes. Well, we're getting it. I shouldn't say we have it. We're in the process of getting it. The cooperation is there, so this is not an issue. It's just a matter of getting it.
We have the majority of it. We're just working through refinement and asking questions to make sure we have everything.
And that will come back to us for ratification or for a checkpoint.
Yep. So I
only have two other pieces, and I'll be quick. The first is that of the models, the evolutionary thing that I'm looking for is some contractual step to set the expectation. Because I think it's really important for us to checkpoint in terms of what is our expectation for the facility? And having to draft a contract is actually a really good opportunity to sit down and go, what do we expect of it for the next 2 or 3 years so that we're all in agreement about what the expectation should be. And the third piece is, just want to reiterate, I think a thoughtful analysis of what went wrong the last time we went through the process, because I don't want to do it again.
Yeah.
And I think, again, we hire consultants so that we can move past these things. And, my goal is that at the end of this, whatever you give us has both an explanation of where we should go based on what you got your feedback and why last time didn't work and why this time is going to be different.
Yeah, I mean, the goal is that it's presented, again, with consensus so that everybody is involved with this. And I think there's a lot of people beyond the council that need to be engaged in this, right? They need to, and the good news in the conversations we have, the follow-up calls we have, is it looks to us as if, a broad spectrum of people are interested in being engaged in this, but that's going to be critical.
And if I could just make one comment to your earlier question of should we just look at where the responsibilities lie rather than look at structure, you just made a great point about having to draft a contract is a great opportunity to do that. So we're using the optimization process to look at, okay, what would you, if you could start over, what would that business mix be? What would those goals be? What would those metrics be? And then where do you put the lines in the sand and how do we make that work here?
If I gave you the wrong impression, then I apologize, but I did not.
No, I get what you were saying. I just thought it was a good way to phrase it.
Well, just one, you're digging into this, one thing I've had a hard time getting answered is the 25% commission, where that came from, so maybe you can figure that out when you're digging through that.
I'll tell you, this is an interesting one, and I'll say this because it was fascinating to me, right, because I was obviously had 500 meetings around this question. It was never contemplated, right?
Well, it's big.
That the customer, remember this is it, the end user, was never contemplated. That the end user would see some sort of an itemized bill that would have that in it. We have never, and we don't know every convention center, we don't know everything, and we don't want to say this, but that is a highly unusual practice, right? And it is an example of something that was never contemplated. I don't want to get too long here, but I'm somewhat passionate here because we spent time with a lot of the caterers that we all know here, and we came up with the approach that we came up with. With them, they were right at the table. This was everybody thinking together. And that was never contemplated. The fact that there is a revenue stream that goes from a preferred caterer back to the center. That is a common practice, but that is built in to the pricing and the whole plan. It is.
And they had that before, and now it's getting thrown on the end user, which is a shocker for customers, potential customers, and everything. It's a hard sale. So that we need to dig in that a little bit. And then also, just looking at these, I'm having a hard time understanding another division of the city as an addition
sure.
here. So that's one I'm going to have a struggle with, but I'll wait to see all the data on that.
Yeah, and I would agree, of the various options that were presented in our packet, I think there's agreement that status quo is not an option. I mean, we need some change. And nor am I enamored of the idea of a city department running the whole operation. I'm not sure government is the best entity to be running that in a highly competitive arena like that.
Unintended.
All right. If we can reach consensus on that, because I agree with that point as well. I mean, if that's good feedback for you guys to operate on, I fully would say you can eliminate Model 1 from even consideration. So.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, no, you got to keep tightening that.
That tightens up your options a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Any other comments for today? So we'll look back. We'll look for some.
So now to Councilmember Hickey's first question is: now we'll start bringing some specific. Will be the next step. So today was really, as you can see, getting your minds around this as we talked about the specialized industry that this is.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for the update.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
All right, moving on to our second topic, which is the integrated transportation study session. Mr. Freeze is going to lead off.
We told him he'd give us trans with him. We'd have to get there early. We just all got a handle.
I'm just
kidding. I think he already read it. He did his homework ahead of time.
Just give him a UMC pen. Did you get a UMC pen? Oh, that's right.
Those belong to Councilmember Wojcik.
I know, I'm just looking at it.
Okay.
He's not here, so I can flip through it, right? No.
Yeah, you can look at it. I just wanted to make sure they get to Mr.
Wojcik. Yes.
All right, Mr. Freeze.
It's mine?
For you.
Well, thank you.
I'm sorry. All right, Mr. Freeze, why don't you go ahead.
As has been the custom in the last couple of years, we attempt to come to you as a city council before major items go to the DMCC board. This Thursday is the second meeting this year of the DMCC board. It's scheduled for Thursday, the 29th, beginning at 9:30. And the board is being asked to take certain actions regarding the integrated transportation study, and we want to share with you what those actions are and indicate to you that once they have made a decision as to their actions, we will report back to you, and potentially as soon as next Monday, to ask you to take other similar actions as it relates to the integrated transportation study. So in your packet, you found a memo that was prepared by the EDA staff and the city staff that we are calling the executive summary. It's a compilation of the five major studies that were done as part of the over the past year and a half regarding transportation issues in the community. So I'd like to just spend a few minutes with you, kind of not necessarily reviewing the specifics of the report, but just talking at a high level about the expectations that we would ask of you as a council, again, potentially as early as next Monday. So the presentation today, we want to talk about three things: the overview of progress since March, when we last gave you an update and a briefing prior to the March DMCC board meeting, and the actions that we're again requesting of both you and the board to consider over the course of the next week, and then talk about next steps and future action items. So the progress that has gone on since March,
There's been a finalization of the four studies themselves. The executive summary of each of those studies has been completed. And again, what was presented to you is a staff report that constitutes an executive summary of those. An identification of areas of exceptions. We felt that there were certain areas that still needed further review and study, and I'll point those out as we go through the presentation today. Development of an implementation and phasing framework. That's the next step that will be coming forth. It'll be a work activity that will occur over the next 90 days or so. Again, being in a position, hopefully, at the September DMCC board meeting and probably a first meeting in October for the council to take action on the implementation and phasing framework. There's also been a meeting of developers called by the chair of the DMCC board to talk about something called lidding, building a lid or a cover over Trunk Highway 52. These are conversations that are occurring throughout the country, and there was a meeting called of about 20 to 25 developers, both local and regional, by the chair of the DMCC board to talk about that concept. And there has been a significant amount of public outreach and community engagement sessions and the preparation of some grant submittals that we want to talk to you about today. What we're actually requesting of you, either on July 2nd or the 16th, would be acceptance of the ITS studies, agreement on areas for further study and action, feedback on the implementation of phasing framework, and resolutions of support for these grant applications. So what's been accomplished today? This is a chart that was put together. Charlie developed it several years ago as we first started into the studies. That basically shows the course of action over the next 20 years. We've now completed the needs and concept development and the full alternatives analysis, and we'll be moving on then to the concept design and environmental review as part of the implementation plan. There are many more steps to go. This is a kind of a roadmap as it might relate to individual projects, but it presents a framework for how each of the studies would be moving forward in the future over the 20-year projected four phases of the DMCC plan.
And just on that slide, I think it's important to point out that the third kind of area of the concept design and environmental review as part of the studies work was done on those as well. Not necessarily completed to the point where everybody's in agreement with what the concept should be, but we certainly looked at different concepts for different aspects of the study.
So just moving on to the next slide, some things then that we just want to remind you about what the planning process is involved to date. Starting back in September of 2016, the defining what the purpose and need was going to be for the projects, doing conceptual alternatives then starting in January of 2017, detailed alternative analysis that began in May of 2017, and now last fall completing and a presentation at the board meeting in March of this year of the preferred alternatives, and again, as I indicated, a final approval of an implementation plan and study report in September of this year. So the acceptance of the ITS preferred solutions, what we're looking for is approval of the travel reduction and travel management program strategies, the parking investment strategy, transit service investment strategy, the street investment strategy, and the active transportation investment strategy. We'll talk a little bit more about those going forward here. But there are basically those five strategies that are laid out in the report that has been prepared.
And in the memo that you received, each of those five were summarized in terms of five or six key actions that have been identified through the course of the studies.
Okay. Next slide. So under infrastructure, the commuter parking outside of the district, the peripheral and remote parking, emphasizing the parking within the districts for the visitors, patients, residents, students, and retail customers, and less emphasis on day-long parking for employees. Circulator alignments, active transportation elements such as the city loop and the expanded bike network, and a unified district design guidelines for streets. So under services and programs, the Transportation Management Association, which has been formed, you'll notice here on the slide, their branding is Arrive Rochester. That group will begin meeting now with the selection of a software vendor that you approved at a recent council meeting. They'll begin their activities again in probably August. Actually, I believe they have a meeting in July and then another one in August. So the downtown area transit circulator, the expanded park and ride express bus service. For example, I just received word today that in response to the demand at the Chateau Theater, where we were daily over parking that space by about 100 cars. So if any of you are by there on the day, it looks like the matinee shows are really good, but that's over 260 parkers there daily. We now have a new lease agreement with the new owners and operators of that facility to allow us to continue to use that site. That's just one of many. The primary transit network we talked about is part of the comp plan that would operate on Broadway as well as 2nd Street West and 4th Street East. The mobility hub strategy and the autonomous vehicle for long-term implementation into our transportation plan here in Rochester. So areas of further study. So again, as you read in the staff report, there was several areas identified, 7 of them here, that it was felt that at this particular point, there was still further study and action that needed to be taken. And we wanted to be able to move on with the work that's been completed, carve out those pieces that needed further study and action, and implement those particular elements in the implementation plan. So locations of peripheral parking, commuter parking, the mobility hubs, whether that on Southeast is the Grand Park, whether it's other commercial sites up and down 3rd Avenue, and also in the far Northeast, whether it's, again, west of 52, over 52, east of 52, identifying that it needs to be in the peripheral area, periphery outside of the DMC district, but the exact location and the economic opportunities associated with each of those locations need further review and study. The refinement of the BRT circular routes then go with that. Wherever those mobility hubs get located, then possibly there will be a necessary refinement in the circulator routes.
Richard, we have a question here.
Yep.
Could you expand a little bit on the location of potential decking over TH-52? The DMC hasn't been briefed on that yet.
Yeah, and that is something that Mayor Ryback has initiated, and he's taking a cue, if you will, a little bit from MnDOT, who's had some studies that they've been doing with the city of Edina, the Rondo neighborhood in St. Paul.
What's it mean?
It basically means building a bridge over the freeway that could be anything from a park, a community space, a connection of the two sides, to an aggressive economic model, if you will, for, do we still have a picture in here? That basically commercial development would occur, retail, housing, and here's an example in the lower level here, where up in the cities, the ABC ramps are built.
So what's our commitment to this at this point? Because this isn't something I've heard either the DMC or the city council.
Well,
so what's our commitment?
You've heard about it as it relates to west of 52 over 14. We've talked about it there. He's suggesting maybe we could move it in closer to the core of the DMC district and implement it maybe over Highway 52, for example.
I think in the interest of the DMC chair is to see if we can't pull some of the commuter parking on the west side in closer to downtown so that we get some advantages in terms of the relationship of that to or integrated with development. So its concept is to look at this idea of coming up with mixed-use development that would incorporate some commuter parking in closer proximity to St. Mary's in the district and Miracle Mile.
So you've seen it out here. This was the mobility hub A in the presentation.
Spanning Highway 14? We're building it over Highway 14?
That was one of the options that was considered. Again, similar to the ABC ramps and downtown.
So what's our commitment at this point to this?
No.
Okay.
No. Further study and analysis.
All right.
So again, phasing and the implementation schedule, which Charlie's going to talk about in just a minute here, impacts of right-of-way on private property. So again, anytime we prepare a document, a drawing that shows anything, people will say, well, how does this impact my property? Particularly if the circulator was operating on 11th Avenue, for example, or 2nd Street or 3rd Avenue. Well, how does this impact my property? And what we basically said that there is no representation that is being made as part of the study specific to a particular property at this point. All of that will require further analysis. The repurposing of general travel lanes. So again, the issue of dedicated transit lanes, is that that's something we was felt it was needed further study and action. Again, the repurposing of travel lanes, whether it's for bike lanes, or removing and parking, what it may be, again, looking at additional study and action needed there. And the parking allocation and management.
We have a question here.
Yes. Richard, you said repurposing of general travel lanes for bicycles. I thought we weren't going to give up any travel lanes for bicycles.
We aren't. That was the recommendation, but it was felt that, as it might relate to repurposing of lanes that are used for parking for other modes, that it just needed more discussion, more analysis, and that, again, nothing specifically represented in the plan was going to be implemented without that further study and analysis.
And that analysis would likely be happening on a case-by-case basis.
Okay.
As projects come along, those questions are going to arise. So we just want to recognize the fact that the solutions don't necessarily dictate what will happen in response to some of these.
So we could put, with no removal of lanes for bikes, we could add that to that.
Well, again, what these are is exceptions to the final study.
Okay.
Where the study made certain recommendations that bike lanes would be on 3rd and 4th Avenue, south, northwest and southwest through the core of downtown, and on Center Street, for example.
Okay.
This is basically exempting those out and saying that before that decision is made, there'll be further study and analysis. Okay. As far as the implementation and phasing framework, it was to identify defined projects to advance to the next phase. Each project will be assigned in a five-year time frame. When I say five-year, I mean phases. So we're currently in phase one. Phase one of the DMC plan runs from 2015 through 2019. Phase two begins in 2020. So each project will be assigned to a phase as to when it might occur, again, giving some people a better understanding of the set forth some expectations that aren't clearly set forth at this time. High level of critical path information to document anticipated costs, responsibilities, and dependencies, and revisit and update the plan on a regular basis. So we anticipate this likely would occur in conjunction with the annual CIP preparation. So what does this implementation plan look like? Here's an example, okay? And it's an example at this point, it's illustrative, and over the next 3 months we're gonna be working. I'll let Charlie speak to it because he was a major contributor to not only the format, but some of the content. But this is just one page of what's now become, I think, about 20 to 25 pages of implementation strategies. And
so in the implementation plan, the way the concept is laid out right now, we would have probably 7 or 8 different topics like transit, street improvements, bicycle and pedestrian improvements. We have one category that looks at monitoring activity, another category that looks at program type issues like the need for efficient street maps, protect right of way, those kinds of issues. So as Richard said, in each of those areas, what we're trying to do is identify, now that we have sort of this general framework for plan, identifying specific projects, and slotting those in at least initially into 5-year time periods when we think that they would be most likely to happen. As the projects get slotted in, they get put in one of three categories is what we're thinking right now. So the first category is what we call implementation. That would be related more to things like policy and program type activities, so things like monitoring activity, adoption of parking policies, whether that's relative to financing of parking facilities. Then we would have a second category that's actual construction activities in that particular time frame for each of the various categories. And then the third category is what we're calling prepare at this point. Hopefully we'll come up with a little better title there. But the intent for that category is to identify actions and activities that we need to do in a given time period to get ready to implement the project in the next time period. So we know for like construction projects are going to, if there's any federal money involved, they're going to have to go through an environmental review process. They're going to have to go through a preliminary design process. So getting ready for a construction project involves that front end work. Those are the types of activities that then fall into the prepare category. So we kind of got the policy, regulatory types of things. We've got the actual construction, and we've got the kind of getting ready for construction or getting ready for deployment. There's the three groups.
The thing I like about that last column is that sometimes it's the forgotten work. In other words, you get ready and you get all geared up and you build something. Well, what's the next thing? Somebody used to say the unintended consequences or the intended consequences of that action. And so it kind of lays forward that when we do this, then we also have to prepare these other activities that are necessary for either the next phase or that will be necessary to support the build action. So this is a work in progress. You'll see this again within probably the next 90 days. The hope is to get it before you in the DMC board meeting. It's that September, October timeframe.
And as Richard said on the previous slide, along with each of these activities, you'll see a general estimate of what the cost of the activity is going to be. You're going to see identification of who's responsible. It's not necessarily always the city that's responsible for doing all these things. And you'll see also some information about what are there any things that have to happen in order for a project to advance. So what are kind of the dependencies? That's kind of the critical path part of this work that'll show up in the plan document is what are the things that have to happen for this next thing to happen. So there'll be some thinking around that as well reflected in the plan.
The other thing this document will help you, as all of us do, is plan the CIP for the DMC project itself. It will also help us determine then the timing at which we need to look at as it might relate to grant opportunities. Segue. To this one, when we already are doing that we already we've learned of some grant opportunities. One of them is called the Build Grant. It replaces the what was called a TIGER, T-I-G-E-R, Federal Grant Program for Transportation. This is the new version of TIGER. And it's better utilizing investments to leverage development is what that stands for. Each community, applying agency can submit up to 3 applications. We've identified 3 projects working with the DMC EDA staff. The first being the acquisition of solar buses. We'll talk about that more in a minute. The redesign and construction of Highway 52 and 14 interchange, and potential decking over 52 as a planning project. There's also some FTA competitive grants, the low emission program, and the pilot transit-oriented development program. So the build investment grants, one of them will be to complete the full access interchange at 1452. We're all familiar with the fact that if you're westbound and want to go southbound, you have to, there's an at-grade crossover you have to deal with. Same way if you're eastbound and want to go northbound, there's an at-grade crossover. This design, conceptual design, we actually have been working with MnDOT on and off, for the last 6 months on this, but conceptually would be how we would replace, how we would address that. You approve this actual project as part of our Corridors or Commerce application, which we were not successful in achieving, but this is the same project we submitted for that. MnDOT has encouraged us to submit this again under the Build Grant Build Grant program. So you've seen this one before. We're going for a different grant at this time under the Build instead of the Corridors or Commerce.
And just to add, it's being laid out, and it's, you know, we've looked at it from the context that commuter parking is developed either to the west, adjacent or over Highway 14, or to the south, over Highway 52. That this design will fit, you know, with either of those types of parking developments. So we've been trying to look ahead to make sure we're not doing something here that would preclude a future parking solution.
With our interest in electric buses, we're stepping that up a little bit to look at the possibility of providing a solar as a way to assist in the generation of electricity to charge the electric buses. And this is another grant application that's being submitted. Would require the acquisition of several buses and the charging station. Again, the picture here is an example of how that might work. But we're submitting a grant application for that project. And the third one then is a planning grant. That's a separate part of the grant process where you can submit for planning grants. It is more limited as to the amount. As to the first two, the maximum that we can receive from the build grants, I think, is $25 million and requires a 20% match. The interchange is estimated to be about $32 million, so 25% match. 25 works really well. And again, the transit fits well within those frameworks. The planning grant cap, I think, is $2 million. And we're looking at, again, is taking this concept a little bit further and doing more planning associated with it. There's a lot of issues, not only access issues, but the whole economic development portion of this and what the potential gains could be from having economic development occur in that portion of the community, as well as parking.
The other thing that's nice about the planning grant is there's no match required. So we have to need a local match for this particular part of the program. So.
Is that a federal grant?
Yes.
It's federal, yeah.
Moving on then, we've talked about the low and no emission bus program. The last one here is an FTA pilot program for transit-oriented development planning. You're familiar with TOD as it relates to the comp plan. This would allow us to look, apply for a grant that allows us to begin looking at the Second Street Circulator, which would be, we believe, is an eligible fits with the criteria. That does require a 20% local match. That particular grant application, I believe, is due by mid to late July, so we've got a little bit of timeline, and I don't think we've finalized the scope at all on this. So I think on that particular grant, actually on all of these grants, I think we're coming back to the council on July 16th for your support in the form of a resolution to make the application. So wrapping up here then, so again, the action's being requested not today, but next Monday, would be the acceptance of the ITS studies with the exclusions or the exceptions agreement, and which would constitute that an agreement on areas for further study and action, and those would be incorporated into the implementation plan. And then feedback on the implementation and phasing framework that you might have based on what you saw today and going forward, and resolutions of support for the grant applications, and I think we're really at this point shooting for July 16th on those. So that's all I have. Again, just kind of a precursor to a further discussion at the council meeting on the 2nd.
Okay. Questions, comments? Mr. Ruska.
Richard, is there anywhere in here that addresses public realm?
No.
Okay. So I know on Second Street there's some confusion and some concern about the public realm that's being proposed. So.
I think in regards to public realm, one thing to keep in mind is we do have a set of district design guidelines that the council adopted about a year ago that really get into the sort of design aspect of the public spaces. With, you know, there's a chapter that talks about street corridors, a chapter that talks about expectations related to private development, and I think the third chapter that kind of focuses on the parking side of things. So we actually do, I think, have a pretty decent set of guidelines and policies related to public design.
And where's that at?
That's the adopted DMC district design guidelines.
And we don't have any. We have the ability to change any of that.
It's just like any other policy document. You can certainly change, you know, consider and change it. Yeah.
So while there's nothing specific yet, I think on page 9 of your packet, the second page of the memo under the street investment strategy, we had those different hierarchies of streets, and those were began addressing kind of the same thing Charlie talked about, is what the streetscape may look like, what the cross sections in the roadway might look like, how the allocation of space kind of got to that, but I don't believe it was specific to the public realm issue that you're talking about on Second Street.
Okay.
So we're intending to have a discussion specifically on the St. Mary's Place public realm document and the Second Street Southwest geometric layout, which there's an interplay between those two right now. And the council will have that on our committee of the whole on July 23rd is what we're projecting.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? All right, thank you for the update. It'll be we'll be interested to hear the how the DMCC discussion goes as well. Get that feedback. So, all right, so that concludes this topic, Mr. Hickey.
Yeah, I just had something for other business. So it was, I think, December, we approved the consultants to start putting together the land development manual, and we were told we're going to get some regular opportunity to provide feedback, get some updates. So I think we'll probably do. I think we got in a little bit of trouble with the comprehensive plan, waiting for the very end to, you know, get input from the council. So I think certainly I'm looking for an update and see where we're at and provide some checkpoints, make sure we're on the right track. Okay.
All right. Mr. Bilderbeck.
For everybody's information here, I just asked Anessa. I've been receiving a lot of calls and noticing a lot of furniture being left along the boulevards, and I've had some calls and complaints, and I've asked her to make a notice and put it in the paper or an article just to make sure people understand that that's not allowed, that you're not allowed to leave desks and couches and beds on the curb and for people to pick up free.
Even put a sign on it?
Even if you put a sign on it. So I've been getting a lot of calls from neighbors who are unhappy with the way the neighborhood's starting to look. So just for your information, I've asked her to do them memo so that people understand that that's not allowed.
Okay. Mr. Campion.
Yeah, so be quick. So I have a couple of development informational meetings coming up that were scheduled over the 4th of July week. And it made me really think about kind of our policy for handling meetings around the 4th of July and also development information meetings at a time when a lot of people choose to take a holiday with their families and scheduling meetings that might impact their neighborhood over that time. So one thing I was going to propose, and I'll do it probably in January, is that, if I'm still on the council, I will do it in January.
Why January?
Because that's when we set the meeting schedule for the year. It would basically be a kind of summer recess for a week over the 4th of July week so that we don't have a meeting, and we also don't have any conflicts with those development informational meetings. Getting that all sewn up, I think, prior to next year would really be one of my objectives. So just wanted to let everyone know, and if you have any feedback along those lines, I'd internalize it and bring it in with the documents.
All right. Anything else? See no one raise hands? We are adjourned.
Thanks.
I got it.